You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news and technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Folks, do you enjoy listening to Kick-Ass News? Well, then become a part of what I'm doing here and help support the show by going to patreon.com/kickassnews and making a donation. Your encouragement and support is always appreciated. And now, enjoy the podcast. In 2016, the year of making America great again, folks in both parties seem to be nostalgic for presidents past. If you talk to a Republican, 9 times out of 10, they'll tell you that given their druthers, they'd dig up Ronald Reagan and nominate him for a third term in a heartbeat. And in the decades following the assassination of JFK, Democrats have romanticized him into the hero of the liberal fairy tale known as Camelot. But what if I told you Republicans in the audience that Ronald Reagan was not the first president to embrace supply-side economics, long considered a key accomplishment during his presidency? And what if I told you Democrats, especially those too young to remember the 60s, that JFK was no Keynesian? And in fact, his greatest accomplishment may well have been reviving the U.S. economy through dramatic across-the-board tax cuts and an overhaul of the U.S. tax code. Probably forgot about that, huh? Well, it's all in a revealing new book called JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity, which overturns many myths about both presidents and credits John F. Kennedy with embracing the very conservative economic principles that would become the bedrock of Reaganomics. It's written by Lawrence Kudlow and Professor Brian Dmitrovic. Larry Kudlow is a senior contributor at CNBC and a frequent guest on their show Squawk Box. Prior to that, he hosted his own primetime show on CNBC called The Kudlow Report. He currently hosts a weekly radio show called The Larry Kudlow Show, which broadcasts each Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern on WABC Radio and syndicates across the country. He's the economics editor at National Review Online and writes a weekly syndicated column. During President Ronald Reagan's first term, Kudlow was the associate director for economics and planning at the Office of Management and Budget, where he engaged in the development of the administration's economic and budget policy. Prior to that, he started his professional career at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, where he worked in open market operations and bank supervision. He's also worked in the private sector as chief economist and senior managing director at Bear Stearns & Company, and currently as the CEO of Kudlow & Company, an economic research firm. His co-author, Brian Dmitrovic, is a historian, a senior associate at the Laffer Center for Supply-Side Economics, and department chair and associate professor of history at Sam Houston State University. He's a columnist at Forbes.com, and the author of the landmark history of supply-side economics called Econoclasts, The Rebels Who Sparked the Supply-Side Revolution and Restored American Prosperity. Today, they sit down with me to talk about their new book, JFK and the Reagan Revolution. They take on the commonly held narrative of post-war prosperity in the 50s and early 60s, and they almost gleefully burst Democrats' bubble as they make the case that liberal icon JFK, was definitely not a Keynesian. We talk about the unusual team of rivals who shaped Kennedy's economic policy, how he took almost childlike pleasure in hazing the liberal Ivy League professors on his Council of Economic Advisers, and the story of the blue-blooded conservative who won Kennedy over as a supply-sider. We'll talk about the rarely acknowledged connection between Kennedy's civil rights policy and his economics policy, and what motivated his successor, Lyndon Johnson, to see those policies through. Then, we'll discuss where it all started to fall apart, and later served as an inspiration for Ronald Reagan. Plus, Larry Kudlow will talk about his role as an informal economic advisor to GOP nominee Donald Trump, and whether or not the Donald is actually listening to him. Coming up with Larry Kudlow and Brian Dmitrovic in just a moment. Today I'm sitting down with Larry Kudlow and Brian Dmitrovic at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum, an appropriate setting because Larry and Brian have written a brand new book which explores the influence that John F. Kennedy had on Ronald Reagan and his economic policy. It's called JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. Thank
you. Great to be here.
Well, secret history indeed. You open the book by accusing liberals of a concerted effort to rewrite the history of JFK as a supply-sider and misrepresent him as a diehard Keynesian.
So many of my liberal friends, and I have quite a few liberal friends.
Well, yeah, you worked over at CNBC.
Yes, thank you for that. I do. I still work at CNBC, but they all beaten up on Reagan and his tax cuts, so-called for the rich, and beating up on Reagan people like myself and Brian and so forth. But what they won't acknowledge is that Kennedy was actually the first supply-sider. That is lost to history, basically. Yeah. And that's what makes this book fun. And Kennedy, first guy to lower marginal tax rates since the 1920s. If you can get a Kennedy person to acknowledge that JFK was the first supply-sider, I need to meet them. You need to introduce me to
them. You've never met one, huh?
I know lots of Kennedys, good folk, most of them, been on a TV show for one reason or another, but they just draw the line, you know? And in fact, we published the tax rate tables in our book, if only to show people that they did the same thing in principle. So that's what makes the book fun. It's unfortunately, JFK's role as a tax cutter has been lost to history. Mm-hmm. And it's a legacy that the Democratic Party has basically written out of history. It's like in the old Soviet Union, you're a non-person. Remember that when they did it all the time? JFK on taxes, a non-person. And that's too bad because he did a lot of good. He snapped us out of the Eisenhower stagnation. But B, he's a Democrat. And one of the things that I want to get is a conversation. This could be replicated. And those guys, in effect, JFK and Reagan, were bipartisan tax cutters. So it's a different story than the politics we have today.
And I wonder, do you guys think that JFK would even recognize the Democratic Party today?
He would recognize the status quo. He would recognize growing at 2% per year for 8 straight years or even longer, because that's exactly what he confronted in 1960 when he ran for president. Mm-hmm. And what he would not recognize today is the complacency about it, how his party, the Democratic Party, is not even talking about economic growth. Amazingly, it was Bernie Sanders who was the only one on the Democratic side who even talked about raising the economic growth rate. And Sanders himself held high the 5% growth rate. It was so ludicrous for a socialist to talk about his policies, big government policies, producing 5% economic growth, but nobody called him out on it on his side, because the Democrats have become so inimical to economic growth. And now Hillary Clinton is not even talking about economic growth. I think John F. Kennedy would be aghast at those developments today.
Yeah.
I think Kennedy would be a Republican today.
You think so?
I do.
Who would you equate him to that's out there today?
You know,
on the left or right?
Unfortunately, that
a McCain?
Moderate conservative Democrat type really doesn't exist. There's so much polarization between parties now. And as I've said, it doesn't have to be this way. But look, Kennedy was a hawk on foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's a World War II hero and was very, very tough on communism. It was a big part of his plank. Reagan, also very tough on communism. It's real easy for me to substitute the word ISIS for the word communism.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think Reagan, Kennedy would be very hawkish. And on the economy, as Brian noted, Democrats today don't do growth. They try to do redistribution and solving inequality with something called social justice. And all they do is attack successful people. That's all they do. Kennedy was not in the least in that way. He would tangle with business periodically. That's okay. But basically, he wanted to reward. Everybody got his tax cuts. Upper, middle, lower corporations, they all got tax rate reductions from Kennedy. Democrats today would just not do that. And it's a tragedy in a way.
Yeah.
I'm an ex-Democrat, by the by. Proud to be an ex-Democrat. I think it takes, you have to be an ex-Democrat to really understand why they're so wrong today.
No doubt.
I mean, Reagan was an ex-Democrat.
Right, right, right. We often cite the fact that when Kennedy came into office, the top tax bracket was 91%. But one thing that comes out in the book that I didn't necessarily know is you talk about the fact that it wasn't just hitting the 1%. The government was dinging Americans every rung up the ladder.
Yeah, there were, 24 tax brackets from 20 all the way up to 91%. And you know, the rates above 50%, basically nobody paid. The very study that motivated Kennedy to cut tax rates that he received from Stanley Suri, the Harvard Law professor who had become Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Kennedy, pointed out that only 43% of income was even reported, and virtually every rate above 50 had nobody paying it. Only one in five people who theoretically could be paying it were paying it, because what they were doing is just shifting their income into non-taxable income streams. So what the effect of that tax rate was to justify the lower rates. One of the reasons we had 20, 22, 30, 40% tax rates on the little guy is that the top tax rate on the statute book was 91%. When you lowered that top statutory rate, then all of a sudden your cover for taxing the little guy was removed. And FDR had actually been very clear on this. It's one of the reasons he talked about having 100% income tax in World War II was so that you could tax the mass of the little guys where the real money is in terms of government revenue. So that consensus really needed to be shaken up, and John F. Kennedy shook it up.
If you were a small business woman or you were starting your own business, would you be locked into paying that rate at that point?
Yeah, you...
At the beginning. I mean, later on, if they got wealthy, you're right. They can hire expensive lawyers and accountants. But suppose you're just starting out.
Yeah, if you're just starting out, so you're trying to start a business in the early 50s or early 60s or late 1950s, if you're just taking in income in your own personal schedule, well, you start every $2,000 or $3,000, you have to face a higher and higher bracket. Now, you could incorporate, but then the corporate tax rates go up pretty quickly, all the way up to 52%. So this was a recipe for the Fortune 500. I mean, there's a reason the Fortune 500 came into being as such in 1955, and that was that big settled corporations were the most functional in this environment. The dynamic entrepreneurialism of the American economy awaited a tax cut.
Talk about there was a lot of resentment to the higher tax bracket or the so-called 1% because there were so many tax dodges. No one was really paying that 91%. And there were cases of guys like Louis B. Mayer, the studio head at MGM, who these guys were essentially hiring lobbyists to get Congress to write tax loopholes just for a very few people.
Yeah, well, if you're lucky enough, as Brian said, the status quo worked for you.
Yeah,
GM was fine with it. You know, probably GE was fine with it, but the rest of the country wasn't. Stanley Suri was regarded as a liberal, wasn't he? The tax guy. Right.
Yeah.
This is an interesting point. So Stanley Suri, who was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, as Brian said, was Doug Dillon's. Dillon liked him a lot. Dillon brought him in. He was a Harvard Law tax professor. And was regarded as a liberal because his idea was to lower tax rates and at the same time get rid of the loopholes. Now, that is lost to history.
Yeah.
So if I were a Democrat today, instead of taxing rich people and try to spend your way into oblivion, which won't work, I would just use that model. Okay, we're gonna get the big guys, get them by getting rid of all their loopholes, but we're gonna simplify the system by bringing the rate down. So that's a backdoor way of getting at it. And yeah. No, I thought that was pretty clever. I thought Dillon, right, the Republican socialite, New York banker,
right,
who was had the vision to see that. This is the way you sold that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been helping Trump out on the economy and taxes, and that's the way he's selling it.
Yeah,
that's right. He just spoke the other day in New York Economic Club. He's cutting the rates and really capping or getting rid of loopholes for individuals and companies. Very interesting.
Right, right. And his big thing is he's going after the hedge fund managers.
Hedge fund guy. He just needs to say that.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask. I was going to save that for later. But at the end, I was going to ask you what you thought about that. But since you brought it up, okay. Taking on the hedge fund managers, that's not...
You know, the problem with that is the so-called... interest carry. It doesn't make any money. There's no real money there. He's getting rid of it as a loophole. I'm okay with that. On the other hand, if it were me, I would say the hedge fund, no, you don't get the capital gains tax. You don't get the carried interest tax, but you're evolve yourself into a C corp, which is really what you are. Stop faking it. And then you can pay the corporate tax, which is, under Trump's plan, would be 15.
Okay.
Now, I think under Trump's plan, they'd have to pay the income tax, which is 40. He'll bring it down to 33. So, but I'm saying, you know, in politics, there's some things you have to do sort of ritually. You got Mrs. Clinton out there taxing rich people and rich corporations and capital gains and a little bit of mau-mauing going on.
There's a lot of it,
I
think.
How about that? Mau-mauing.
Yeah. Well, going back to the 50s here again, another thing that came out in the book, you completely blow apart this myth that the post-war 50s and 60s were this boom period where everyone was buying cars and appliances and homes and jobs were just falling out of the trees. What's wrong with that picture?
Number one was the frequency of recessions. Recessions were coming, well, there were four recessions from 1949 to 1960, so four in 11 years, and they were increasing in their frequency. They were coming every 3 years, and then by 1960, every 2 years. That was the first problem. The second problem was the long-term rate of growth around which that business cycle trended, and that was only 2.5% in the Eisenhower presidency. This led to the increase in structural unemployment. Those who were still unemployed at the economic peak, it kept leaping up from 2.5 million up to 4 million, maybe even 5 million were the predictions when Kennedy became president. This is while the baby boomers were still young children. And Kennedy talked about this all the time, about like, hey, we got a lot of, you know, new workers coming online here. Are we going to struggle with a low rate of economic growth? That's not going to work in terms of crime and all sorts of social problems. We need economic growth. So the other big problem with the 1950s status quo is that it was designed by government and it was understood as such. The high tax rate system was supposed to dampen the economic cycle so that we wouldn't have some kind of runaway boom like the 1920s that would lead to a Great Depression. This was the thinking at the time. So the trade-off was we're going to have lots of recessions and a low rate of growth, but we're going to avoid a Great Depression. Those aren't halcyon days.
Bizarre thinking. Bizarre. Yeah. By the way, Nixon, it may have cost Nixon the election. Rockefeller and Nixon meet in the famous Fifth Avenue Compact. At the time, it was a big deal. And Rocky was the growth guy. And ironically, he wanted to cut tax rates and close loopholes. Now, as governor of New York, all he did was raise taxes, but that's a different book. But he wanted 5% growth. And Nixon kind of signed off on it, but never used it on the campaign trail. Never, 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 never.
Well, I mean, it must have been hard for Nixon to make the argument that, oh, these guys in the White House are really botching the whole thing here.
Meaning Eisenhower White House.
Yeah, exactly.
He was vice president. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
I mean, how do you make that
case?
That's
an insight. He just didn't want to go there. Nixon never understood economics. Nixon ruined the economy in the 70s when he went off the JFK model. That's my point earlier. Republicans are not tax-cutting saints.
Yeah.
And Democrats don't have to be tax-hiking devils. You could have a change. You know, you could have a reversal here.
Yeah, the legacy of the of Nixon's defeat in 1960 stayed with us in the 1970s because I think one of the reasons Nixon went off the gold standard and then raised taxes from 1969 to 1971 as president was so that he wouldn't be following the JFK model. I mean, he ran against the JFK model, and he certainly never converted publicly or otherwise to the JFK model, and so he just adopted the policies that he had supported in 1960. And it's funny, in 1968 in his campaign, he never talked about economic growth. The economic growth was 5%, just like he had pledged with Rockefeller in 1960, had been for the last 8 years. Instead, he talked about crime, we talked about the silent majority, anything but economic growth. And I think if RFK had lived, of course, Robert, he would have made growth an issue in 1968. It might have been a different election.
RFK wanted growth, was not a high taxer, rebelled part of his campaign, besides the war in Vietnam, which was key. But another part of his campaign was his opposition to LBJ's welfare state, the Great Society. Kennedy said, you're going to turn everybody into dependents, government dependents. And guess what? I mean, he was a completely different fish than that wing of the party. Never joined that wing. And he was a crime fighter. I love RFK, as it, I guess, comes as you can hear it. He was like his brother. He was not part of the left-wing wing of the Democratic Party.
You say that JFK, for him, economic policy and civil rights were two sides of the same coin. I guess even the Dixiecrats in the South, apparently they were okay with having a stagnant economy because it meant less jobs for African Americans, huh?
Yeah, Kennedy certainly thought that the civil rights problem would be solved, that the bill would be unlocked if he could get economic growth. It became apparent in the summer of 1963 when his tax cut bill could not get out of committee that it was the Southern segregationists who were holding it up. And that then became very clear in the Senate Finance Committee that October. And the reason was that if there was going to be 5% economic growth, there was not going to be a lot of unemployment in this country. And if there's not going to be a lot of unemployment, there's not going to be a lot of effective discrimination against African Americans. So if you really are a segregationist, you got to stand up and show it. And that was only a few people in the South. And so there, the concern was if there's economic growth, then Americans are much more likely to kind of drop the pretense of racial prejudice and just welcome everyone into this big pie prosperity. And I think that's one of the big reasons that civil rights succeeded as it did. In a way, it actually might even vindicate some of the conservative concern about the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Maybe it was not entirely necessary, because if you just have a booming economy, as is natural to this country, I mean, everyone's going to get along very well.
It's kind of a hidden point here that growth solves a lot of problems. Okay? It may not solve every problem, but growth makes people happier, more optimistic. Folks don't hate each other. They don't point the fingers, call names when they're happy and prosperous and working. That's a benefit of growth. It's an attitudinal benefit as well as a monetary benefit. I think what you're seeing today in the absence of growth is a country that's very divided, split, and angry, and cranky at each other, at foreigners, you name it, everybody.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back to talk more with Larry Kudlow and Brian Dmitrovic when we come back in just a moment. If you're enjoying my chat with Larry and Brian, then you'll want to read their new book, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. And right now, you can download the audio version of their book for free with a special promotion just for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickassnews for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, which can be JFK and the Reagan Revolution by my guests today, Larry Kudlow and Brian Dmitrovic, or any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickassnews. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to the show.
You know, we have to remember that it was LBJ who actually technically put through the JFK tax cuts after JFK had been assassinated.
Yeah, not for any economic principles.
Right.
What was his motivation there?
First of all, John F. Kennedy did the most difficult thing. He got the tax cut passed in the House. That was the first big hurdle, and that was the main one. That was done in September 1963. And then it was bogged down in the Senate Finance Committee. It was Al Gore and Russell Long who were making things difficult, Harry Byrd. So Kennedy was assassinated, and Johnson saw that Kennedy had two big bills. He had a civil rights bill and he had a tax cut bill. And we have to do something to memorialize this slain president. The civil rights bill would be too difficult to get through right then. So he put all priority on the tax cut, and he strong-armed a few people and got it passed that February. But as early as the end of that year, 1964, there's all sorts of evidence of Johnson entertaining advice that he should rescind the tax cut, that he should loosen money, that he should reverse the Kennedy policy mix of a strong dollar and tax rate cuts, which then he fulfills the reversing of the Kennedy policy mix through the next 4 years of his term.
In 68, he put a surtax on high income. Mm-hmm. So basically took the top rate from 70 to 78.
Yeah.
So there's LBJ.
Yeah.
I mean.
So that was the beginning of the end for the the Kennedy prosperity there.
But see, the other guy who was a conservative, became a conservative Democrat, pro-business, reward success, was Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to understand that Reagan was a Democrat. Reagan would never let us in the administration roll back the safety net. He didn't want to add to it, but he would not. There was a lot of options to cut back on the budget, and he would not do that. And Reagan would not even entertain the idea of cutting back on Social Security. Reagan was for Social Security and put together a Republican-Democratic coalition, Labor, Moynihan, and, of course, a lot of Republicans, Alan Greenspan, to save Social Security. So Reagan really is a different kind of bird. Well, so was Kennedy. I don't know. I'm just looking to – I'm trying to find who's going to fulfill those roles in the next dozen years or so.
Yeah, and just like you were saying that we forget that there were Republicans who were the tax raisers, we also forget that there was a big austerity push pre-Reagan in the Republican Party.
So Pete Domenici, he was a wonderful man, by the way, wonderful man. But Pete was a budget balancing, deficit hawk, austerity guy. Howard Baker, Bob Dole, all these Senate bigwigs who ran and lost against Reagan, I might add. Here's one. Barry Goldwater, supposedly great libertarian free market guy, he voted against the tax cuts and ran against the tax cuts. Ran against them. That's the dopiest thing I've ever seen. That was from Jude Winiski's books, first time I ever, the late Jude Winiski, famous book, The Way the World Works. Yeah, no, I don't know. Goldwater may have had mixed motives, but basically he didn't understand economics. Because we worked with him in the Reagan years when he was chairman of the Armed Services Committee. Mm-hmm. And he was terrific, Goldwater, terrific. You know, strong anti-communist, put up money for it. But he didn't understand tax cuts. Can you imagine running a Republican running against tax cuts? Dumb.
Was it just whatever Kennedy said yes to, he was saying no, he was playing it politically? Or
We looked at the Goldwater's campaign literature from early 1964, right when the tax cut was passed over his nay vote in the Senate. And Goldwater seems to have interpreted the tax cut as a Keynesian measure. So Goldwater actually internalized the developing false Keynesian interpretation of Kennedy's economic policy, because his campaign literature said, I do not approve of the president's tax policy, which seeks to manipulate the economy, which seeks to provide a temporary benefit. And that was not how John F. Kennedy had designed or justified his tax cut. He had certain liberal advisors who were trying to say that, but Kennedy turned his back on that and said, no, we need a long-term policy to get the tax code out of the way. So it seems that Goldwater was a little blinded. That's funny. He actually had a tax cut going in the Congress at that point in time, and Reagan actually spoke in favor of it in the early 60s, and this was a simultaneous spending and tax cut. I think we should make one point, is that We do have to understand why the Republicans were so concerned about spending. I mean, if you look at the 15 years before 1962, real federal spending went up 150%. Mm-hmm. I mean, over and above inflation. I mean, the federal government's doubling, tripling, quadrupling in size. What are we going to do about the spending? And that's a very pertinent question. And so people like Representative Burns on Ways and Means, the Republican from Wisconsin, were like, okay, you're having a tax cut. What about the quadrupling of spending in real terms? Are we ever going to talk about this? Vermont Royce at the Wall Street Journal said the same thing. It's a good question, but ultimately the answer was to be found in cutting tax rates, getting the economic growth, and then weaning people off government spending.
Mm-hmm. See, Brian is being very kind, very good Warren. He's crafted a very smart analysis so as not to beat up on Senator Goldwater. So I am a Goldwater fan too, okay? But. In 1980, he opposed Reagan's tax cuts. In 1981, he opposed Reagan's tax cuts. He was a guy who argued the basic root canal theory, which Republicans had argued ever since the Depression, that first you have to cut spending and then you'll cut taxes. The problem is the spending cuts never came, mm-hmm. right? Brian's model on that is much better. You cut tax rates, you won't need all that government spending. The demand for welfare and so forth comes down. Now, Reagan was great with Goldwater, and Goldwater was great for Reagan because we gave Goldwater so much money for defense spending because he was a really fierce anti-communist hawk, and he was the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, which is a very big deal. So we gave him a couple $1 trillion, and then he voted for the Reagan tax cuts. But I don't think he ever bought into the model. I think at heart he was basically a root canal Republican. And I like him. He's a good man. I met him a few times and blah, blah, blah. But it's the wrong model.
Yeah, and the Republicans, the line they had in the 70s was that the Republicans were now the tax collector of the welfare state.
It was wonderful.
You know, before I forget about it, you know, one amusing little bit in the book that I found kind of entertaining was that you talk about this kind of team of rivals that Kennedy had back during the Kennedy administration and how the Keynesians on the Council of Economic Advisors were all these egg-headed Ivy League professorial types with little real-world experience. And you talk about the fact that Kennedy kind of put them in awkward social situations for no other reason than to entertain himself. And I guess there's some debate as to how much he actually valued their actual input.
I think Kennedy really liked to have intellectuals around. You know, like Schlesinger, okay, whom I had a lot of contact with down through the years. But I don't know that he ever really listened to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, because Brian's point, they tried government spending in 61 and didn't work. And I think Kennedy was a very hard-minded politician and a damn good one. And he knew he had to have 5% growth. That was his view in order to be reelected. And he wasn't getting it. And I think he threw them overboard and went to Dillon, who he respected and who was his social equal, very important in that world, and decided to go a different way. Decided to go a different way. Yeah. I think that's really, it's almost a psychology analysis, but I really think that if the other thing had worked, then they would have won, the liberals would have won. But it didn't work because it doesn't work. It violates the laws of economics, but free market economics. But I think Kennedy was really a good politician, having Republicans in his cabinet. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, I mean, it's the kind of thing I'd like to see nowadays. I really would. Like when George W.
I'd like
Bush,
to see a lot of Republicans in the cabinet.
but you know what? No. I don't want you to get carried away with this partisanship you're hinting at because it was team of rivals. So you hold that thought.
Yeah.
All right? And George W. Bush wins in 2000, but not exactly. Fair enough?
Right.
Not exactly. Right? I mean, you have 5-4 Supreme Court appointment. Okay. So I felt and told all the Bushes I knew that they should put Democrats into the cabinet. Find yourself moderate Democrats, put them in the cabinet. And you have to run almost as a coalition presidency. Bush didn't. And I think it hurt him in the longer run of his presidency. Now, Reagan didn't either, but Reagan spent a lot of time wooing Democrats.
Yeah.
And it paid off.
Yeah. See, big time.
Or contrast that with Obama.
Yeah.
Obama doesn't woo anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And gets up at press conferences and tries to sell, you know, whether it's healthcare or whatever, and just insults Republicans. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they're not going to vote for him. So there's this very important political shift that's gone in the wrong direction, in my opinion, whereas Kennedy and Reagan were smarter. They were better politicians.
Now, Larry, you are advising Donald Trump.
Yes.
Do you think he gets that message? Do you think that he would be reaching across the aisle like he says he would?
It's a hypothetical,
mm-hmm.
you know, hypothetical. But my answer is yes. I've never talked to him about this. I'm a kind of a tax and economic guy informally with him. But I believe he would. And I'll tell you why. Because A, he's a good businessman, and B, he gave contributions to both political parties
yeah.
down through the
U. Yeah. When you're in Nobody the real lets estate, us forget that.
when you're in the real estate construction business, yeah. that's what you do. And yes, he had the Clintons to one of his weddings. Sure. Well, I don't have a problem with that. As long as his basic story is the same. If he's cutting tax rates and he wants to put a similar thinking Democrat either in the cabinet or as a, you know, an advisor, kitchen cabinet, or if he wants to go to the Democratic Party in Congress, I'm fine with that. That's what you should do.
Now, have you given Donald Trump a copy of the book?
I sent one to him.
Okay. Do you know if he's read it yet?
I don't know, but I'm going to be seeing him shortly
okay.
before the debate, and I'm going to ask him. I'm going to make sure he committed it to memory.
Yeah. Do you think that the lessons of the book are ones that he gets?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
You're the advisor.
I'm just
the sensei here. Is the student getting it?
I'm a one feather in it, believe me. But I do think he understands, A, the tax rate.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. And B, I do think he understands the politics.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a pretty crafty guy. Not everybody agrees with me, obviously.
Yeah.
So I understand that.
Have you sent a copy of the book to Hillary?
You know, I've all my Democrat
equal
friends,
opportunity.
I know. I want to get the book to her. I can't. I haven't found the right check. I wanted to talk to her. I've said I'm not going to name names, but I know a lot of her group, and I've said just give me 10 minutes with her, and I will sell her on corporate tax reform.
Yeah,
right. Which to me is an easy bipartisan issue.
Yeah.
Ain't
yeah,
it.
Just mention Kennedy. You know, Bill Kennedy was his hero. Do you think that Bill Clinton got the Kennedy economic message?
I think he got it rammed down his throat.
Kennedy was suave enough to change of his own accord. I mean, he did, yeah. you know, okay, he put these Walter Hellers and Arthur Schlesinger in awkward social circumstances. But he did, as Larry mentioned, take their advice. He put into practice that big spending for about a year and a half. All the advice of the Ivy League professors, it didn't work. Forecasts of a recession came in, and he just cashiered it in favor of a marginal tax rate cut. Bill Clinton had, I guess, a substantively similar experience, except it was mm-hmm. more pressure that – external pressure that was applied to him. He tried Hillary Care. He had the tax increase on higher earners in 1993. And there was no real change from the early 1990s trends in terms of economic growth. You had the big Republican win in Congress in November 1994. That date, Election Day 1994, ends up being the long-term floor of both the stock and the bond markets. And from that moment on, Clinton is going to make sure that he does welfare reform, that he gets the corporate tax rate cut, and that spending remorselessly goes down such that there's a budget surplus implying a future tax cut. So Bill Clinton effectively did the JFK thing, except it didn't all come from his own personality. Yeah. There was some real electoral pressure that forced
him. Politics. I want to sort of rephrase. I said that, you know, he cut the capital gains tax, for example, and he supported a free trade bill, and he went through welfare reform, which can be looked at as a tax cut.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give him a little more credit than jamming down his throat, because I think with Clinton, it was politics. He was a mm-hmm. good politician.
Yeah.
So in Arkansas, remember, he was attorney general, ran for governor, won, and then got beat for governor. So what did he do?
Yeah.
He moved to the right.
Yeah.
Well, same thing, what Brian described. So he did Hillary Care and tax hikes in 93 and 4 and lost both houses of Congress for the first time. Whatever, since 1954, whatever. So politically, right, this is the end of big government as we know it. Mm-hmm. Where'd that come from? Well, it came from the election. But that, I don't, you know, it's funny. I, having hung around a lot of politicians in my time, I don't really blame him for that. It was what it was. And it wound up doing great. As Brian said, helped the economy, helped the stock market, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I don't know which way this election's going to go, but if Hillary gets elected, I hope that she learns from his mistakes. And if Trump gets elected, I hope he listens to every damn word you tell him, Larry. I really mean
that. You're very kind. You're very kind.
All right. Well, Brian Dmytrovic and Larry Kudlow, thank you, guys. The book is called JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. Larry Kudlow and Brian Dmytrovic, thanks for talking to
me.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Larry and Brian for coming on the show. And if you enjoyed today's episode, then order their new book, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. I'll include an Amazon link where you can order it in the show notes for this episode and on our website at kickassnewspodcast.com. Or if you'd prefer to listen to the audio version, you can download that for free through that special trial offer just for our listeners at audibletrial.com/kickassnews. Another book to add to your reading list is Brian Dmytrovic's excellent book, Econoclasts: The Rebels Who Sparked the Supply-Side Revolution and Restored American Prosperity. Be sure to look for Larry Kudlow's weekly syndicated column and see him on CNBC, where he's a senior contributor and a regular guest on Squawk Box. His radio show, The Larry Kudlow Show, airs on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern on WABC Radio, and it's syndicated nationally by Cumulus Media. You can also follow Larry on Twitter at @Larry_Kudlow, and Brian is at Brian Dmytrovic. Larry's website is kudlow.com, and you can read Brian Dmytrovic's work at laughercenter.com or at forbes.com. Be sure to subscribe to Kickass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews. Or if you prefer, you can set up a recurring monthly contribution at patreon.com/kickassnews. You can visit Kickass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @KAPolitics. And please be sure to recommend Kickass News to all your friends on your social media. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnewspodcast.com. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kickass News. Kickass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.